This is Taking AIM, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking AIM starts right now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. I'm Steve Woodward. Thanks for joining us once again, and we've got a lot to get to, so let's do it. Before that, I want to mention and celebrate our devoted sponsors, the Marketplace Restaurant and Catering since 1980, your go-to for delicious breakfast and lunch options, as well as full-service catering for intimate office gatherings or the wedding of the century. And our newest sponsor, We the People Declare, a citizens activist group, which is monitoring the public servants in Pinehurst and across Moore County. We the People Declare, go check them out online on their website and Facebook page. I would be remiss if I did not mention that coming up later in the program, we will have a conversation with Moore County Board of Education candidate David Norris. And coming up, we'll be joined by Robert Bortons, a local business owner. He is the CEO of Classical Conversations, which is the leader in publishing homeschooling curriculum. And that's located right here in Moore County. Robert also is the host of a podcast, The Robert Show, and he's the author of a recently distributed and released book entitled Woke and Weaponized, How Karl Marx Won the Battle for American Education and How We Can Win It Back. So Robert will be joining us a little bit later, and we'll get into all of those things. With me now is Jim Peterson. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Steve. Glad to be here.
Jim is, like David Norris, a candidate for the Moore County Board of Education. I believe this is your first such run for position.
First.
But Jim is not a candidate who's coming out of nowhere, I think you might say.
No.
He has long been a watchdog of Moore County schools and the Board of Education. One of the few faithful who is routinely in the audience for the board meetings, which can be, for some, sleep-inducing, but often quite energizing as well.
It sure is. It's a lot of action.
They tend to go off the rails a little bit these days, and we'll get into that briefly in a moment. Jim is a resident of Carthage, and why don't you tell us, Jim, a little bit about your background, and then we'll talk about what could possibly motivate you to run for Board of Education. Not exactly everybody's cup of tea.
Well, my background and my work life, I was in the Marine Corps. Then after the Marine Corps, I worked for the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina, the Sandhills branch here. I was operations manager. And we started off on Highway 5 in a little building. And I think when I started there, we distributed about 20,000 pounds of food per year. But I was hired, we quickly grew, and then we grew out of the little building on Highway 5 to where the food bank is now, Sandy Avenue in Southern Pines. So after a few years, we went from 20,000 pounds a year to about 40,000 pounds a month. Then after that, I got a little bored of that because we kind of quit growing.
You created a well-oiled machine.
Sure, so, did.
Yeah.
So I did my job, then left there. I actually wanted to do something different, so I worked as a financial analyst for a little while. And I had signed some NDAs, so I can't really say what I did or what big companies I consulted for.
Right.
But after doing that, I've kind of felt like a crook. So I wanted to get back into the service of the community. So mm-hmm. then I was hired as the County Veteran Service Office's director. And I retired out of there, and now I'm kind of just a community volunteer. And I'm an accredited VA claims agent now. So I kind of do the same thing to a point where I was at the County Veteran Service Office, right. But now I can pick and choose my clients, and I'm trying to keep it real low key and less than part time.
Well, I've had the opportunity over the years to visit the food bank, and it's quite an operation. In fact, I think when I was a member of one of the local Rotary clubs, that we did a couple of volunteer missions in there, yeah. Just bagging and boxing. The volume of food that comes into that place is staggering. And, of course, the volume that goes out to people who need it is even more staggering.
Yes.
It is one of the gems of our community in terms of taking care of our fellow citizens. Now, the school board, I guess school boards across the nation really have become much more visible and much more on the radar of engaged citizens in recent years, probably due to the pandemic of 5 years ago, 6 years ago now. And then since that time, we have, those of us who actually engage in and consume information are quite aware that many school boards are the root of the indoctrination machine that has become public education, that many school board members are motivated to fill those seats so that they can move their school systems in a woke direction with lots of emphasis on diversity, equity, and inclusion over academic performance, with indoctrination prioritized over the teachings of basic fundamental reading and writing and math. And so that is certainly, there's no exception to that here in Moore County, where we've had some rather, I would say, dramatic swings in our school boards in recent years, from totally out of touch with the community and totally driven by specific agendas, to a little bit of redemption for our school board in recent years, where we've had a few true reformers come along.
Yes.
And now we're sort of back to being a school board that is dominated by either the left or by Republicans who are fake Republicans.
I call them trans Republicans.
Trans Republicans, yes. So what is your principal motivation, Jim, for seeking a seat on this school board?
Well, there's a couple things. What I've been the self-appointed watchdog for Moore County Schools since I retired from the county. Needed something to do, and I like helping my community. But I see a lot of wasteful spending. An example is the private money it was going to pay for the AstroTurf at Union Pines. Why did the school board pay $150-plus whatever $1,000 it was for sod just to tear it up 3 days later? I see them going the other way again. We started pushing the woke DEI, critical race theory, gender ideologies out. But now recently the school board adopted policy that they can now make decisions with absolutely little or no public input. And I see them, I think they're setting it up to push the leftist ideologies again. And also...
And that's really a brutal, sort of stick in the eye to the taxpaying public. To have a school board chair and her minions deliberately revise the conduct of their meetings so that decisions are essentially made in a work session 1 week and then tucked away into a consent agenda for the next week. And then that consent agenda is subject to one vote for approval or disapproval, and it's always going to be approved because we got a 5-2 board right now, five compliant zombies and two reformers, David Hensley and Pauline Bruno. Yeah. But that's, you know, that is a pretty toxic little mix we have right now, and I think it brings to the surface the fact that most people, even some of the candidates for school boards, misunderstand the role of a board member. It is not really to necessarily dictate down to the curriculum level how the kids are educated or what they're taught. The school board members have a fiscal, in my view, a fiscal responsibility that and a watchdog responsibility that really supersedes the minutia that people want to get into.
Yes, a school board is not a teaching position. You need some supervision skills, leadership abilities. A lot of it, what I really focus on, fiscal responsibility. You don't get in the day-to-day activities of the teachers and the staff. You supervise the superintendent. You hire and fire the superintendent. You find a good superintendent who can hire good principals for each school.
And it's nice if you can hire a superintendent who understands that he or she works for the board and, by extension, the taxpayers, and, by extension, the parents of the children in the schools. A lot of these superintendents, and we've had a few of them right here in Moore County, and a lot of these board members, they get behind that you know, golden desk there for their board meetings, and suddenly they become British monarchy, British royalty. And it's ridiculous to see. And then any members of the public, including people like yourself and to a degree in the past myself, who call them out publicly for any kind of hypocrisy or any kind of woke, agenda-driven policies, we're the problem.
Yeah, we're the problem.
You know, we're disruptive. We're not respecting that this is a business meeting. And we don't have time to hear your complaints. Yeah. And in particular, Jim, I want you to talk to our audience about how you tackled the chronic problem of filth and graphic pornography in our school libraries, because you really were at the tip of the spear of that.
Thank you. Yeah, when early on, when I self-appointed myself as the watchdog, I found out about inappropriate books in the schools. So the first book was George. It was mild, very mild compared to the other ones. So I went through the process to formally challenge it, and the way they did it, it was a self-picked committee. So the book ended up staying and kept in the school.
And George is a book which, you know, I guess for children of a certain age could be considered somewhat appropriate. I guess it chronicled the story of a boy named George who was transitioning.
Yeah, he wanted to transit. It was all about teaching little kids how to transition.
Right. Yeah. And so, again, if a high school senior would choose to read such a book with parental supervision or approval, okay, maybe I can live with that, but you know, a middle schooler, an eighth grader,
not
I don't
available.
Think so.
Yeah.
So, and that was just
not elementary school kids.
You were not breaking any revolutionary ground there. You were just saying there are books in our libraries that are not appropriate for certain ages of kids.
Yes.
Especially if they're in elementary and middle school.
Yes.
That was it.
That was it.
And then where did it go from there? After George, post George.
Yeah. So. Actually, after they kept George, policy was rewritten to take away my right to challenge books as a citizen. And at the same time, you had a former chair of the Moore County Democrat Party threatening online, if any parents speak out, their children will fail. So someone like me, the parents were put between a rock and a hard place. So what I did, I didn't stop. So what I did, I got the more inappropriate level books, and I just started showing up school board meetings and reading them out loud.
Yeah, and that was done in other parts of the country too, because the problems are the same in many of these school libraries. And when you started reading those books, the chairman and other members of the board would beg you to stop.
Yeah, they didn't want to hear explicit words.
They didn't quite see the absurdity of acknowledging by demanding that you stop reading the book that they were, therefore, by extension, condemning the content of the books, which they say should somehow remain in the library.
Yeah, it was inappropriate to read in front of a room full of adults, but the same people fought for little kids to read and be exposed to that material.
And, of course, the left calls any effort such as this book banning.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's not the case. If you want to go order the book on Amazon and let your kid read it at home, be my guest. Yeah. If the public library wants to carry the book, be my guest. Yeah. But these are school libraries. They are extensions of the educational process and environment that we place our children in.
Yeah.
It's like a no-brainer. But let's move on because we have limited time, and there's another major topic that we have to discuss, which is the woeful neglect of our kids when it comes to the security of our schools and our classrooms. We have 13 elementary schools currently that have not one single armed guard detailing them on a day-to-day regular schedule. In other words, they're totally vulnerable.
Yeah.
13 elementary schools. The other schools have maybe one security guard with who is armed. We have foolishly, in my view, for many years, employed our own Moore County School Police Force, whereas the vast majority, every other county but one other, have sheriff department supplied staff in the schools.
Yes.
Trained. Yeah. and very competent at protecting kids and from evildoers, kids and teachers and others. How in the world do we undo this very serious problem? Because, you know, right now they're nipping around the edges, talking in the board about maybe using some off-duty sheriff's deputies. But, you know, where was that conversation 5 years ago?
I think that was the issue that was my last straw that made me decide to want to run for school board. Because every day, 13 schools in Moore County are unprotected. And it's, I don't know if it's total incompetence or complacency. People think, oh, that won't happen here. But the ideas they're coming up with now, I'm thinking, why weren't we doing this 5, 6, 7 years ago?
I'll tell you why. Why is no one
trying to recruit?
The lack of leadership on the board to get it done.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a leadership issue. The county commissioners gave the school systems the money to pay these school resource officers. Nobody wants to work for. A cop doesn't want to have to answer to a non-law enforcement supervisor leadership. Yeah. They need professional leadership.
Right.
The school SROs are great. They're trained. They're good professional law
this
enforcement.
This is no criticism of the existing ones that are out there.
But I wouldn't want to, if I was a law enforcement officer, I wouldn't want to have to answer to a board, a superintendent, or non-law enforcement administrator telling me what to do.
Well, if they simply can't hire trained and you know competent people, then we have to find another solution because every day that goes by that the schools are not protected is an unsafe day for our kids, and that's just a flat out truth.
Yeah.
But anyway, Jim, I thank you for running for school board, and most of all, I thank you for joining us here today.
Thank
you. On the big show.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Jim Nash, small business and homeowner in Pinehurst. Recently, a number of Pinehurst citizens have seen the need to form a new initiative called We the People Declare. Website, wethepeopledeclare.com. We support citizens who value freedom, ethical governance, and community integrity. We will ensure our governance faithfully serves the public's interests, maintains open communication, accountability, and transparency. Get involved. Visit wethepeopledeclare.com and sign up to stay informed.
Joining me now is David Norris, who is a candidate for the Moore County Board of Education, also known as the School Board. I've known David for several years now. He is an IT professional. He is the chairman of the Carthage Planning Board, which for those of us who live in other municipalities in Moore County, we know what can happen when those planning boards go off the rails. We end up with apartment complexes that rival those in Raleigh's North Hills. David also is the former president of the Carthage Rotary Club, a Rotarian. Thank you for joining us.
Steve, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Good to see you. So I guess the obvious question is, after all of us have been observers of the county school board in recent years through various iterations and various superintendents. What is motivating you to run for a seat on this board, given the fact that it's not something you do as a hobby necessarily?
Well, Steve, you know, I had to give this a lot of thought when I decided to run and, you know, sort of filter through all the reasons in my head and prayerfully also. But when the board voted to spend money, taxpayer dollars, on the proposed site for Carthage Elementary in closed session, and I want to emphasize that, they voted in closed session to spend $465,000 of taxpayer money. That just really sent me in the wrong direction. You know, I think, in my opinion, that was completely wrong. And, you know, that eked of secrecy on the board's part. So as the public probably knows, I filed suit in Superior Court on that issue. And at the urging of some other acquaintances and mentors, they said, David, won't you run for school board? So I gave it a lot of thought, you know, and I care about the community a lot. I moved to Carthage 3 years ago, and I made Carthage my hometown. I immediately became involved in the area, in politics, in the local politics, and in the Carthage community. I developed relationships with all the commissioners, joined the Rotary Club, as you have already mentioned. So I really deeply care about the community, and as a conservative, I care about how our tax dollars are spent. You know, the point is not the money. It's the fact that they did it secretly. So after a lot of consideration and because of the lack of transparency with the current school board, I decided to drop my lawsuit and run for the board itself, you know, and maybe through my influence change some of the ways the board does business. You know, give parents and the public a more open board into the matters of the school system.
Well, I've been watching the school board closely for a number of years now. And of course, when I first came into the area, the superintendent was Robert Grimacy, who was a very woke sort of agenda-driven superintendent. And he's long gone now, thankfully. We had a moment in time, I think, with the school board in late 2022, when there was a lot of optimism that it could work collaboratively with then-Chairman Bob Levy and David Hensley. And they ran as a slate, some of these candidates. And it looked like we had a team in place that was going to be committed to reform and also to performing its number one, in my opinion, objective as a board, which is to be stewards of the taxpayers' dollars. To be fiscal stewards. Quickly, that whole scenario went off the rails for a variety of reasons, which we don't need to get into. When you are elected to the board, what will be your principal objectives? Knowing, of course, that there will be opposition due to some of the sitting members at the moment, including the current chairman.
Right. Yeah. One of my key issues, and I've already alluded to this, is transparency. I think the board needs to be completely open. Of course, in matters that legally the board's required to keep, you know, behind closed doors, like matters of issues of discipline, you know, with students and things like that. Otherwise, I think decisions that the board makes needs to be completely open, and their board is not doing that right now. One of the things I want to change right away is the policy 2330, which was the agenda policy. Right now, they've effectively shut down any kind of discussion. And if they want to put their agenda, their personal agendas on the for a vote. They do it by discussing it in a work session and then putting it on the consent agenda. Consent agenda is not meant for items like that. It's meant for routine items.
Yeah, it's meant for things like approving the holiday calendar for the coming academic year.
Exactly. So one of the things I want to do and see done is a complete rewrite, scrap and rewrite of that policy, you know, to give the board members, you know, the right to voice their opinions. You know, the public elects 7 school board members. They have the right to hear from each 7 of those, not just a handful or a majority. And I think that's one of my key things. Another one is, as we've talked about already, is fiscal responsibility. We need to be accountable to the taxpayers of Moore County. We can't treat the public purse as a blank check. We have to be good stewards. And another thing is we need to realign the relationship that the board has with the superintendent and the central office staff. The board has the final say. Okay, they develop the policies. The superintendent follows those policies. And of course, I respect educators, and I would respect our superintendent, whoever it may end up being. But I'm not going to just fall in line just for the sake of falling in line and taking whatever is said at point blank, you know, acceptance. I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to ask hard questions.
Well, I hope you will when the time comes. And of course, owed to years of willful neglect, the Moore County Board of Education is faced with the need to build a number of new schools in the coming years. Starting with the Carthage Elementary School, it's not a question of whether that needs to be built. It's a question of where and how. You don't stroke a check for $465,000 to place a prospective school on a property that has no infrastructure, where the cost of bringing in water and sewer alone is staggering. And you don't do that, especially when you have vocal opposition. But that being the case, we know that schools need to be built in the coming years, any number of them. But there's another huge elephant in the room when it comes to our local school situation, and that is the fact that they are woefully unprotected during the school day because of a severe shortage of what they call student resource officers. They're actually should be called armed security guards, because in the world in which we live, that's what they need to be. We have not one elementary school in our system. I believe that's 13 elementary schools. Not one of them has a all-day, every-day security guard working the school.
Right.
And this is a serious problem, and it continues to be current board member David Hensley has repeated the fact that this is a crisis, and has actually proposed some solutions. But what is your view on this situation, which is dire in my opinion?
Yeah, I agree. It is dire. The lack of SROs is appalling. And a matter of fact, I've been doing some outreach through text, on an official platform that allows the text recipients to reply back to me. One of the replies I got back was a question along these lines. And they said, what one school doesn't have any SROs? And as far as I know, as you alluded to, they have SROs to an extent on a rotational basis. And after a little brief conversation back and forth with this person, it was pointed out to me, and I don't know if this is true or not, I've been trying to follow up on it, that the alternative school has no SROs. And the teachers and staff that work at that facility are really in danger just by the mere fact of the nature of the students that are taught there in that facility. But that's another high priority with me. We need to fix that problem. You know, so far the current board has just kicked that can down the road.
Yep.
They just kicked it down the road, and we need to hit this head on. We need to come to a final solution. Whether it's giving it over to the sheriff or raising salaries to the point where we can hire more SROs into the current police force, you know, whatever that solution is, we need to make it happen, period.
Well, and it bears repeating that Moore County is one of only two in the state of North Carolina, one of only two counties in which the public schools are not guarded by sheriff's deputies or members of the sheriff's department.
Right, yeah.
Us and of Mecklenburg, of all places. Every other county doesn't have this issue. And why in the world should that be okay in Moore County, which is prides itself on being sort of an exceptional county where a lot of really successful people come to play golf and eventually to retire, and where increasingly we have younger families with children moving here and to seek this, to embrace this quality of life that we have, apparently. I don't understand. And the other thing, the other problem is that parents are disengaged too often. If you ask a random parent if their child's school is guarded by a security guard, they're probably going to say, well, I think so. I assume they are. In many cases, they're not.
Again, that gets back to the secrecy issue with the board. That kind of knowledge is not given out freely. And I was just thinking, you know, if I had a child in the school system, I'd be alarmed. And as a board member, if something happened, and if I took over in a board member spot and we had an incident where there an SRO wasn't present, I couldn't live with myself.
Right.
You know, we have to fix this problem. It's not an option. It's just not an option. We cannot kick that can down the road anymore.
Well, we had an incident at Pinecrest High School a couple of years ago, late in the academic year, where a young woman was stabbed in the parking lot.
Yep.
And there was a security guard on campus who responded very quickly to the situation so that luckily her life was spared. And there was also a very proactive campus nurse who came in to address the problem. So the point is that in that case, we had the people in place that needed to be there to save this young lady whose life was spared. But in many of these schools, in a similar situation, there would be no one to respond at all.
Right. So an SRO is not going to prevent any kind of a crime from happening. But your point is, and to your point.
Well, potentially they can by their mere presence.
Right, exactly. But with them being on site, you know, that gives that immediate response.
Right.
You know, where if something does happen, they can respond immediately and try to, help the victim and find the perp, you know, and do all the things that they need to do.
David Norris, I thank you for joining us. And you are an IT professional, and that means you have excellent social media presence. Where do people go to learn more about you and to support your campaign?
You can find me on Facebook at David Norris for School Board. And also I have a website, davidnorrisforschoolboard.com.
Thank you again. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
We certainly appreciate Jim Peterson and David Norris joining us this morning, talking about their candidacies for the school board. And in the studio now, I'm very delighted to introduce Robert Bortens. Good morning, Robert.
Steve, thanks for having me on the show.
Robert is well known to many of us here in Moore County for his many ventures, and we're going to get into those shortly. But first, we want to do what we do every week, and the much-awaited lineup of crazy, starting with public enemy number one for this week's show. It was kind of a slam dunk. You've probably seen the awful behavior of this mob of people who disrupted a church service in St. Paul, Minnesota last Sunday. And boy, they could not have been a more vicious and disgusting group of people. And who was along for the ride to chronicle their behavior? None other than disgraced former CNN anchor Don Lemon, more popularly known as Don Lemon because it rhymes with moron. And he was there to, just by coincidence, he claims, to chronicle their activities. And he even wanted to make sure that the pastor of the church knew that it was okay to disrupt the service because, you know, First Amendment and all that kind of stuff. Play clip one.
So let me just make it clear, because this assistant attorney general, I don't know, gosh, what's her name? It's something, Hammett. Dylan or whatever. So I had no affiliation to that organization. I didn't even know they were going to this church until we followed them there. We were there chronicling protests. Once the protests started in the church, we did an act of journalism, which was report on it and talk to the people who were involved, which included the pastor, members of the church, and members of the organization. That's it. It's called journalism. First Amendment, all that stuff. For all of you people who believe in the First Amendment, absolutist, there you go. So why don't you talk to the actual person who is in charge of the organization and whose idea it was to have the protests at the church before you start blaming me for stuff for which you have no idea about. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
What a smug dude that is, huh?
Yeah, we actually have members of our community in Minnesota that go to that church, and so
really
they they're definitely fearful and not understanding what's going on. And you know, First Amendment obviously applies to the government and what they can do. You don't have a First Amendment right to walk into someone's kitchen and yell at his wife for what she's cooking. So that was definitely trespassing as the least thing.
Yeah, and I don't have a First Amendment right as a, let's say I'm an independent journalist, to walk into a hospital during a open heart surgical procedure to interview the surgeon. I don't have the right to enter the cockpit of a commercial aircraft to discuss my concerns with the pilot about the altitude that we're flying at or whatever. I mean, that's an absurd presumption. And furthermore, if you saw the interview that he did with the pastor of the church, it was just revolting. How he seemed to be so dismissive of this man who, you know, was conducting a worship service. And the point has been made that there are a lot of churches, including many in Moore County, where if you've tried to pull that kind of stuff during a church service, you're not walking out of there.
No,
in many cases. So, but, you know, if you thought that public enemy number one was annoying enough, and you haven't heard anything yet, because as we do every week, we identify the individual or group representing public embarrassment number one. And we're back in Minnesota because that's where all the embarrassments and the enemies are these days, unfortunately. And they've been, 3 weeks now taking on the ICE agents and trying to disrupt their activities and keep them from deporting, murderers, rapists, robbers, you name it, drunk drivers, the whole list is there. We come across, I guess he's actually a young man, but he doesn't think so. He was interviewed by a random independent journo. You'll hear the story. Let's play clip two.
I want as many people as possible to hear what I have to say. I am Charlotte Sanders, and I use she, her pronouns. I am a liberal, leftist, pagan, lesbian, transgender woman, and witch. My dead name is Matthew Tyler Sanders, but I am Charlotte. I stand here today to go up against the violence and injustices done to everyone like Renee Nicole Good, George Perry Floyd Jr., Leonard Peltier, Trayvon Martin. I, Charlotte, stand here to stand up and fight against fascism, tyranny, systematic oppression, xenophobia, racism, homophobia, transphobia, misogyny, and hate. I am here to stand up against the bullies and cowards known as Donald J. Trump, Elon Musk, J.D. Vance, Marjorie Taylor Greene, ICE, and all the other cowardly fascists. The reason I have short hair is because I recently just finished beating and winning against a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, and the chemotherapy caused all my hair to fall out. I am also in the process of battling and beating psoriatic arthritis. These ailments were caused by psychological and emotional trauma that I have beaten. I am not a helpless victim. I am a fighter, I am a survivor, and I am a champion. I will not stand down and do nothing. We must take a stand against fascism and hate. We must take a stand against ICE. We must resist. We must fight for our lives. We must annihilate fascism and hate. I am a U.S. Air Force veteran who served this country honorably because I believed in the promise of what I thought America could be.
So keep in mind that it's very cold outside, so part of his poor articulation was probably that he was frozen. But this is what our ICE agents are coming up against in Minneapolis, greater Minneapolis, every day. And these, I don't know where guys like this come from. I assume he's been recruited and flown in or bussed in and getting paid handsomely for his time and lodging and food and beverage and everything.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, they are bussing people in. You see them on tape saying, I'm getting paid for this, or our time's up, let's leave. And yeah, the ICE agents want to get, as you said, criminals in jails. And the reason that there's these media moments that the Democrats are trying to do is that they don't want these criminals to be deported. They're fine with them. We see the Democrats in Virginia right now, to the north of us, they've said that there shouldn't be minimum sentences anymore for rape victims. They want to make it so that pedophilia is probably going to be legal. They want to tax the bejesus out of their citizens. And so it's not a mental illness that's just located in Minnesota, but it's throughout the Democrat Party, in even moderate Democrats at this point are wild leftists.
And, you know, that clip is not just shared with you to sort of expose how crazy some of these people are, but to really emphasize that mental illness is driving a lot of this stuff. This isn't just all vicious, violent people. Some of these people are unwell, and they are, of course, the perfect poster children for the Democrat Party. Now, you mentioned Virginia. Virginia is going the way of probably the poster state for dysfunction and government control, that being the state of California. Their governor, the great idiot, Gavin Newsom, showed up at the Davos World Economic Forum this past week because, you know, he wants to, you know, pretend that he's rubbing shoulders with the global elites. And it caught the attention of one of Trump's cabinet members, his Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent. Don't be misled by Scott's mild demeanor and even tone. Play clip three.
Is the Trump administration is coming to California. We are going to crack down on waste, fraud, and abuse. And I was told he was asked to give a speech on his signature policies, but he's not speaking because what have his economic policies brought? Outward migration from California, a gigantic budget deficit, the largest homeless population in America, and the poor folks in the Palisades who had their homes burned down. He is here hobnobbing with the global elite while his California citizens are still homeless. Shame on him. He is too smug, too self-absorbed, and too economically illiterate to know anything.
I think that sums it up very, very nicely, and that clip will come in handy for some of Newsom's primary opponents when he allegedly runs for president in a couple of years, I think.
Well, if they knew anything about economics, they wouldn't be Democrats.
That's true. Exactly right. In fact, it's the depth of their lack of knowledge that is quite alarming sometimes. I think there's another part of that clip where he said that, maybe he just said it, that the only person who knows less about economics in the state of California than Kamala Harris is Gavin Newsom, which I think also spot on. So Robert Bortons is with us, as I mentioned. Robert is the CEO of Classical Conversations, a well-established publisher of curriculum for homeschoolers, of which there are now legions across the country. He is the host of a weekly podcast, Refining Rhetoric, where he brings in thought leaders and discusses critical topics related to faith, education, etc. But at the top of the list right now is the fact that he is now the co-author of a just-released book, which everyone needs to read, especially if you're a parent, Woke and Weaponized, How Karl Marx Won the Battle for American Education and How We Can Win It Back. And the book basically explains that this slow-motion revolution that has hijacked education did not happen overnight, and we need to awaken to that fact and start focusing on how we undo it. You know, a lot of us, Robert, make reference to various radical Democrat views as being Marxist in nature. I'm not sure people always know exactly what that means, but what was your motivation for this book, and what are the key takeaways that that you hope people will have after reading it?
Yeah, so Marxism basically boils down to they hate private property. They view that private property is the root of all evil. And so our education system, I mean, we have good teachers. My wife was a teacher for 10 years. But the system is designed to fail the students. And the more centralized the control has become, you know, it used to be that the, you know, you had the two school board members on. It used to be the school board members had a lot of say in what was taught in the local schools. Well, that was co-opted by the state, and that was co-opted then by the Department of Education and in the federal government. And so I go through the history starting in 1820 on the Karl Marx view of free public education for everyone, what he meant by that, and why he thought that by having the government in charge of education instead of parents, that he would be able to infiltrate the United States with Marxism and fuse communist Russia with the United States. And so it's a historical account. We start back in 1820 when the first ideologies came into being, and their plan to use the public school system to undermine faith, family, and freedom inside the United States. It's well documented. There's almost 16 pages of notes at the end from all of our sources. We go directly to quotes from the individuals that participated in this co-opting of the American education system. And yeah, so that's the point is, we can't fix the problem if we don't properly diagnose the issue, right? And so and to properly diagnose the issue, we need to know the history of how we came to where we are today, where like Moore County schools, I think 70% of kids are reading at grade level, which sounds good or bad. Nationally, it's only about 35%. Mm-hmm. Right. And so how do we spend $18,000 a year per student and only 35% can read at grade level? It's actually intentional. And we document all of that in the book.
Yeah. In fact, you know, a lot of the defenders of our local public schools say, well, we're less worse than a lot of other places. And you're right. There's like 30%. Not proficient at grade level in math and reading across the board, not good. And we had a couple of candidates for school board on earlier in the show. And I guess the challenge is, you know, a school board is often, I think, misunderstood in terms of what its function is and what it's there to do. If you were going to be on a school board and you're smart enough not to do that,
I'm glad the Jim's running, yeah. David and all the other people.
But how do they effectuate real change and reform, knowing that there's this long entrenched history against them? And we used to think it only existed at the university level, and now we're discovering it starts, you know, in kindergarten.
Yeah, so I think it starts with making sure that you're hiring, you know, good principals and teachers. One of the things that I'd love to see, and it's a state thing, right? They pay you more to be nationally accredited. Well, that means you just have more Marxist ideology that's put into you, and then we're going to pay you more because of that. So making sure that we're hiring teachers and administrators that believe in the U.S. Constitution, that believe in the freedom that that we have, is going to be an important step. And so for them, looking really at, you know, what is the state mandating and how do we, you know, manage to meet the state mandates, but maintain our more culture and making sure that our students can read at grade level. So I would have reading at every single level through 12th grade. I mean, quite frankly, because we know that we're graduating people from high school that, you know, can't read at a sixth grade level in our town. And so every single teacher could start with, you know, phonics. You know, they call it the science of reading now, but taking phonics out of the school system was a strategic play by the Marxist, and we document that in the book.
And in fact, again, to make reference to the local scene here, you know, this current school board undid a new policy that required students to read a book and submit a written book report, you know, every quarter or whatever. And that seemed to me like just a starting point. And yet they wiped that out. That was like, oh no, the teachers say that's too much for the kids. You know, some of them really struggle with writing. And I think what it really was that some of the teachers struggle with grading papers, but that, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but.
Yeah, reading is fundamental. If you teach a child to read and a child reads, then the whole world opens up to them. There's nothing that can stop them. And so that should be the fundamental thing, just getting back to reading, writing, and arithmetic. Again, the Marxists control the teachers' colleges, and they did that very intentionally because they had limited resources and couldn't go penetrate every single school system. So they said, what can we do? Well, let's go co-opt the teachers' colleges. So whether the teachers are Marxists or not, that we're teaching them Marxist ideology through that. So whether it's DEI or ESG or, you know, whatever new term they come up with in the future, that's how our teachers are being taught. And so we really need to have an intentional conversation with our teachers, telling them that, like, social-emotional learning, right, that is part of the Marxist ideology to co-opt our kids' spirit, our soul, and to help make it so that they like socialism. So we all that stuff's documented in the book, and we need to have sober-minded school board members who are going to point out the Marxist ideology that has gotten into our school system and help our teachers and our administrators recognize those and to not take the Marxist worldview, but take a Moore County, Christ-centered United States worldview, because we know that this is the land of opportunity when you take that free market point of view, and when you hate private property, that everyone ends up being miserable.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and of course, one of the problems that we face in a state like North Carolina is we keep electing these Democrat governors. They have complete control over who's on the State Board of Education. The State Board of Education then, you know, puts its iron fist on the process, and that all trickles down to the counties. And you've got these superintendents who don't want to run afoul of the state. So it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then at the teacher level, a lot of these teachers are young men and women who they just want to keep their jobs. You know, they don't want to rock the boat or call out the status quo.
Yeah, well, again, they've gone through college. They think they've been taught the right things, but they just simply haven't. Like my wife, when she started homeschooling our kids, she said, I went to 4 years of college. I got a master's degree. At no point did the teacher's college ever teach me how to actually pass on knowledge to the next generation. And that was intentional. And that's what we expose in Woke and Weaponized, my new book.
That is the book, Woke and Weaponized. You can purchase it on Amazon. Can you not?
Yes.
Yes, you can. We thank you very much, Robert Bortons, for joining us today. And everybody, go out and buy the book. We thank all of you for tuning in to your favorite Saturday morning show, heard exclusively here on WEEB. I am Steve Woodward. We'll be back again next time, taking aim.